This is Over the Trump. And welcome back to Over the Trent. It's been a long summer since we've had a live show, but we're back talking all things Nottinghamshire football. It's going to be positive, very, very negative. Can you guess which teams we're talking about? In the room, we have a full team, including one massive villain for you Nottingham Forest fans. But we have a new member of, well, the Orange Sport, hopefully. He does the boombox. What's the type of music?
It's all hip-hop.
All hip-hop. The hip-hop show, essentially. Basically. On After the Dark? After the Dark. Isaac joins us. Isaac, how are you, mate?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm very happy.
Forest fan, Trent Upper, I believe.
Yep, for many, many years.
How much have you enjoyed Forest being in the Premier League?
I remember the West Ham game was fun. The rest of it, not so much.
The Spurs game was sort of fun.
I was at work for that one.
Oh, were you? It was sort of fun. I had a good atmosphere and you felt, okay, it's not too bad. It's only 2-0 to Spurs.
Yeah.
It's gone downhill quite a lot since.
Quite badly.
That West Ham game was really special.
I loved it.
I'm joined by EFL expert Luke Green from the EFL at Your End podcast. Luke, how are you, my friend?
Good to be back on this week.
You have done a 5K run today in 27 minutes and 31 seconds, I want to say. Should I get the stats up for everyone who's listening?
You can if you want.
Okay, so the pace was at 5.33 km, moving time of 27.50, max elevation of 31 metres above sea level. It was partly windy at 18 degrees. You did your personal best 5K. So massive applause to Luke Green. It's gone a bit Steve Wright, this show. And there's a villain in the camp. Now, I would like to formally apologise to Leicester City fan Ali Glenn, who I have maybe mocked quite a bit at Ocean on chats to his face behind his back. But Ali Glenn is here. Ali,
have you become Dr. Seuss? I will not mock you.
How are you, my friend?
I am ecstatic, over the moon, jubilant. Would you like any more synonyms?
I think it's over the trend, not over the moon. But we're going to start by talking about Mansfield Town. Who were really delaying the inevitable. Who find themselves seventh in League One. Now you're probably asking, where is Kieran? Kieran, who usually hosts it with me, is unable to be here as he's driving down to Bristol. Hopefully he's listening. Don't know what road he'd be on. Does anyone know their M's, their A's? Left at about five. He can't be in Bristol right now.
No, he left about half an hour ago.
Oh, fair play.
So, I know it from Reading, but not from...
Well, much love to Kieran. Keep your eyes on the road. I wish Forest keepers would keep their eyes on the shooter. But that's another different matter. Kieran went to Mansfield Town, his first game at Field Mill, and here were his thoughts.
On Friday the 30th of September, I was at Mansfield Town, up at their stadium, Field Mill, to watch Mansfield Town against Hartlepool. Now, everyone came into this game expecting a Mansfield Town win. Hartlepool came into this game bottom of the table and Mansfield were flying quite high. They're currently sat in seventh and before this game, I'm pretty sure they were sixth. So it really should have been a game that they were going to be winning. However, as I said, it didn't end up being that way. Hartlepool did bring it back from being 2-0 down to win 2-2, thanks to largely their number 9, who came on in about the 60th minute, and then he ended up scoring in the 62nd. So that made it 2-1. And the run of play really changed there. It changed the complexion of the game massively. Hartlepool looked more in control than Mansfield Town at this point, and they kept on pressing a few close chances for both teams in between the 62nd and kind of 80th minute. However, no goals in that time. Then in the 89th minute, in the dying embers of the game, Hartlepool had an attack, and Umera, the number 9, once again did draw them level and made it 2-2. So that was a real... real bad loss for Mansfield Town, and a great point for Hartlepool. Really, it really did feel like 2 points dropped, and the crowd did kind of feel a bit deflated. However, more on the crowd, the stadium is the oldest stadium in professional football, so I would highly recommend getting there. It's a really inexpensive away day, only £5 by train from Nottingham for a return, and tickets aren't too much either. I'm pretty sure the ticket costed me like £15, £19, somewhere around there, so it wasn't a bad away day at all. They're a really welcoming club, and it was just overall really nice away day, even though I got absolutely soaked in the rain. It was probably some of the heaviest rain I've ever been in walking to a football game. So overall great away day. Shame about the result. Hopefully Mansfield Town under Cloughy's son can go on and do great things this season. As I said, they're sat in seventh. Hartlepool are in 20th, and they'll be hoping to push out of League Two again, Mansfield. So it's going to be a really, really interesting season. And as I said, please do try to get down and support this club, because League Two sides are already going through it at the moment. Lower league sides in general going through it at the moment with the kind of cost of living crisis. They need all the money they can get. And you get the enjoyment of some really enjoyable football out of it. So get down there. Would highly recommend. I'll definitely be going back this season. But yeah, it was a great away day.
Thank you, Kieran. Thank you for recording that. We still don't know what road he is on. Luke, you host the EFL podcast, EFL at URN. It's the first time the EFL has ever been truly covered on URN, so we're going to really need your expertise. Mansfield Town, such a disappointing end to last year, losing at Wembley. How have they reacted this year? And they seem to be doing quite well.
Yeah, they started off slowly this season. I think they lost the first two out of the first three games, I think. But they've really picked up since then, and well, as you'd expect, they're in the playoffs at the moment. Mm. I think this game against Hartlepool was bottled. But it was a really good point for Hartlepool, because I mean, after this draw, they won on Tuesday night, which brings them out of the relegation zone for the first time this season, so which is good for them. But yeah, they shouldn't have really bottled this one, because they had most of the possession. And their XG, I know a lot of people don't like XG.
Here it comes, Statman Green.
2.5 compared to like Hartlepool 0.5. So, I mean, they deserved a win, but no, they just let it slip.
Well, Mansfield Town beat Derby 6-5 in the week on penalties in the Papa John's Trophy. I saw that scoreline and thought, what has happened in that game? It would have been brilliant. But, you know, Derby being in League One is the only solace I can really get at the moment. As we said, Ali Glenn has taken quite a lot of abuse. So after this, we're going to talk about Notts County, but he's going to get to pick the tunes for some of this evening. Up next, we have Kasabian Underdog, and I wonder why he's chosen that. So Ali, this one's for you, pal.
DJ!
This is URN
University
Radio
Nottingham.
You're listening to Over the Trent, and we're having to play a few Leicester City songs for a man called Ali Glenn, who's taken quite a lot of abuse since that 4-1 thumping at the City Ground, but the times have changed. We're going to talk about Notts County now, who beat Wrexham 1-0, and quite a few of us were there watching County beat Wrexham at Meadow Lane on Tuesday? Was it Tuesday? I want to say it was Tuesday.
Yeah, it was Tuesday.
Really good event. Second time I've been down to Meadow Lane. EFL at URN, Luke Green. As an EFL massive fan, you're a massive fan of the EFL.
I mean, the National League isn't EFL.
No, it probably should be. Come to that.
Sorry, I stole your bit.
What was it like going down to the conference?
To be fair, it was probably a better atmosphere than we had at Burton versus Forest Green last week.
We like to hear that. Keep that going.
Yeah, it was two top of the table clash, wasn't it? Mm. So Notts County were in second and Wrexham were in first. So thankfully, Notts County won and are now top of the league. And the money ball of Wrexham is not going to plan again.
Well, they are second, in fairness, only a point behind.
Yeah, but it's really hard to get out of the playoffs in the National League. Really hard.
Totally. And for those who don't know, only two teams go up. Notts County occupy the only automatic place at first. Massive congratulations to Notts County. Really big atmosphere building, and they seem to be always having their own movement, what Forest had last year. Ali, you love going to lower league grounds, exploring the world of sport. I think your adventures into cycling have really demonstrated that. You just like going to sport anywhere. What was it like going to Meadow Lane for the first time?
I really enjoyed it. Meadow Lane, it's unbelievable, and it's a testament to the English football pyramid to have a ground that's quite as atmospheric. With two teams as, you know, Wrexham, we were giving it large to them for quite a long portion of the game, but brought quite a substantial following. And Notts County, the final attendance was over 10,000 in the end, which is unbelievable and fairly regular for Notts County. To do that on a Tuesday night is very impressive.
Fantastic support, and must be said, the Wrexham boys were really good as well. It was a great sort of advert for there being depth to football, that football goes beyond the Premier League, and Forest will experience that next year, I feel. But yeah, it's really exciting times for Notts County. Isaac, did you see their goal against Wrexham?
I did not see the game.
It was great.
Luke, do you want to run us through it?
Oh, it was a free kick, wasn't it? It was probably from the training ground as well. It got put short, and then it was overlapping run,
which passed by, into
the box. Ruben Rodriguez megged the guy to get to the overlap.
Ruben Rodriguez, by the way, is a player. Should be playing at least a league higher, because last season he was amazing too. Last season when I went to see them, he was like man of the match every single game.
There's a lot of players last night.
Yeah, they had Carl Wootton last season. He's now gone to Stockport, so he's had a move up.
I think Matty Palmer as well.
Yeah,
is far too good for that level. Great sort of playmaking midfielder.
And yeah, Langstaff, who scored the goal, he will definitely get a move.
Yeah,
maybe in January.
I think they're going to keep him. I think Notts County can afford to keep him unless silly money comes up from, say, a Salford. They can keep him. And I don't think he was the only one who really impressed me. Was it Aaron Namain. Superb.
Absolutely. Especially in the second half.
Really thought him out wide was really exciting performance. What did you think of him, Al?
He was a bit peripheral in the first half, but going into the second, especially this was the period of the game where Wrexham were in control. County had to ride their luck quite a lot. But their one outlet from very slow goal kicks from Sam Slocum, who eventually got booked for time wasting.
He started that on like the 26th minute.
Yeah, it was really incredible. The minute that they went in front, that was the time where it started happening. And all of those long balls would essentially be headed on by one of the strikers and over the top to Namain, who would constantly be stretching. McFadzian, who was the left back for Wrexham, and was causing problems, putting probing balls that you could argue that Langstaff, Scott, Rodriguez weren't really getting on the end of as well as they possibly could have been. But throughout that whole game, he was a constant menace, especially in the second half.
Totally agree. Quiven Castro, and Macaulay Longstaff between them have now scored 15 goals in 12 games. Even Erling Haaland is getting a little bit threatened by that. I mean, imagine Erling Haaland at that level. Wrexham, I didn't think looked like a team ready to come up, in my opinion. Has anyone been enjoying the Welcome to Wrexham documentary on Disney Plus? Anyone? No?
Has the last episode come out yet? Because I might watch that.
No, I don't think it's come out yet, but it's really interesting that they're really plugging the National League, and I think that's a really positive thing to do, and I hope this appears in Welcome to Wrexham Part 2.
The only thing is that Ryan Reynolds has been tweeting like, oh, why isn't these Wrexham games available to stream on like 3 o'clock kickoffs? He doesn't get it at all.
Yeah, that is a little bit frustrating, but I do get his point. I think in an international market,
yeah, internationally,
surely.
Fine. Domestically, yeah. Definitely not.
No, totally agree. Now, as Isaac is joining us for the first time, we've allowed him to pick a song. This is something that we think might replicate his After Dark show. When can Absolutely. They listen to your After Dark show?
You can check that out from 11 o'clock tonight, and that's every other week. So a much better time than last year.
Yeah, last year, wasn't it 1 till 3 in the morning?
Yep, on a Sunday night, which is the best day to do it, I think.
Do you have like an early lecture tomorrow or anything?
9 a.m. So.
Ooh. Yeah. Well, fair play to you. Right, it's Can You Kick It by a Tribe Called Quest. Mm-hmm.
This is URN.
You're listening to Over the Trent in the Thursday rotational slot. This is where every URN sport podcast gets a chance to go live and be in our amazing studios. So if you're just tuning in for the first time, this isn't always on, but we'll try and keep you up to date. We do regular podcasts on Forest, Notts County and Mansfield Town. Now, during those regular podcasts, there's usually two teams we take the mick out of the most, Leicester City and Derby County.
You'll always have Derby.
Brilliant.
Yeah, Leicester City deservedly beat Forest 4-0. Ali Glenn, a man who's had many a joke for one reason or another poked at him, finally gets his retort. A fantastic performance from bottom of the table. Leicester City saw them go up to 19th, which put Forest at the bottom of the table. Ali, just get it over and done with. Come on. Let's hear your thoughts.
I feel slightly punching down from the heavy wow. heights of 19th in the table now. But wow, well, it was a very good performance from Leicester City. Much improved. Even Danny Ward looked okay at times. But I think that both of the Nottingham Forest fans in the room will agree with me that we were allowed to look very good.
Oh, definitely.
Completely yeah. by. And to be fair, we made the most of it. James Maddison, as usual, was fantastic. You know my spiel by now. Maddison for England, blah de blah, all the rest. But it just cannot be overstated enough how good he is. I think I saw a stat. It admittedly, the time frames were very skewed to sort of make him look good. But since a certain time, the only person with more goals and assists in the league than him, tied with De Bruyne.
I think it's January.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, so it's him and De Bruyne, and since about May or June, it's only Haaland. Mm-hmm. And that's frankly ridiculous, especially from a player who's playing in what has been a very disjointed side, albeit not today. But again, unfortunately, as our most informed player, as one of the best playmaking midfielders in the league at the moment, I think he was allowed to have all the space in the world because it is my opinion, and I, despite my better judgment, quite like Steve Cooper as a manager. But my opinion is the way he set up, the 4-2-3-1 that he set up with was completely wrong, completely disjointed for the team that he was playing, because we haven't been bad on the attack even when we've been struggling in the last few games. It's been in the defence that's the problem. And I don't know if anyone else has an opinion on this, but I think the way that we went for the press, or the way that Forrest went for the press, was completely ineffective, especially with Lingard and Gibbs-White.
Oh, massively. I think it was sort of obvious from the start, seeing it all online. Leicester are a team that take advantage of someone like James Maddison, who plays, you know, behind the midfielders, in front of the defenders, and optimise that sort of like half space. And when you're setting up in a 4-2-3-1 with Kouyaté as your sort of defensive midfielder, who is not the quickest of players, he's what, 33, 34 or something like that? And I think, was it the second goal where he was up the other end of the pitch and he was nowhere to be seen when Leicester did score?
Yeah,
The Barnes goal. And setting up like that, you can't let Leicester do that. They've got the players. Obviously, they've been in bad form and stuff like that, but they're not a team that should be down there. They have players that are far better than some of the players we've got. And I was just looking at the stats. I'm quite a big stats guy myself. Almost half of the shots Leicester took were from outside the box.
And interesting. When you have players who are as good at striking from outside the box in that team, Maddison can hit one, Barnes to a slightly lesser extent, Dewsbury Hall and Tielemans. Tielemans himself was crucial in the sort of build-up play. Maddison gets all the plaudits, and rightly so, but that was enabled by an ineffective press from that sort of second line, which was Gibbs-White, Johnson and Lingard. Basically, if you're not... A 4-2-3-1 hinges on a successful press, and if you can't do that, people like Tielemans are just going to give it to your Maddisons, your Dewsbury Hall, Barnes, all three of those guys, who will just be given the complete freedom of the pitch, especially when you're playing a fullback where you can't really afford to let one of the defenders be a stopper, be someone who breaks the line and sort of comes into that defensive midfield role. And there was so much of that space in between it really played into our hands. And teams have been very effective when playing a low block against us so far in the league, and in the even in the previous seasons when we've been doing well, we very much struggle against the low block. And for a manager who I see as quite tactically astute in Steve Cooper to not see that, especially when you guys play low block quite often anyway, it was quite bizarre to me.
Isaac, Forest have conceded an average of 4 goals in their last 4 games. It's really been a tough time for Forest fans.
Yeah.
What formation would you go for? Because the 5 at the back wasn't working. No. 4 at the back hasn't been working. 6 at the back? What do we do?
I said just put more at the back. But I think the 4 at the back idea was fine. And I genuinely think having those players in the positions, it sort of worked. I know we got battered. That's fine. But I think the fact that every game we've clearly been overran in the midfield when we've been playing 5 at the back, and sort of to counter that, we sort of stuck someone else up front. It didn't make sense to me. And the centre-back pairing we had, obviously, I don't think a Premier League standard.
No.
But I think if you're playing in the way that we do, you need a defensive midfielder behind sort of 2 proper centre midfielders. And whether you think Kouyaté is good enough or not, he doesn't need an attacking midfielder in front of him, who, especially as Ali said, is not going to start pressing. You need the 2 proper centre midfielders like O'Brien and Mangala in front of the defensive midfielder. I think that's the way we've got to set up if we want to stand any sort of chance.
Totally agree. Worrell's been missed, overlooked twice in a row now for Steve Cook. Now, don't get me wrong, big fan of Cookie. What he did for us last year helped us get promoted. Was a superb element. But at 31, he's running like a 40-year-old. And to be honest, not in a sort of Jimmy Anderson or Tom Brady way. He doesn't look Premier League fit or age appropriate, to be honest. What do you think the centre-back pairing should be?
I think I saw the news after the international break that Niakate should be coming back. I think he would be by far our best player in the whole squad when he's back. Against West Ham, he was amazing. I think if you play 4 at the back, if you play him, I think Worrell seems to have been dropped. It sort of seems like proving a point of saying, like, right, you're a captain, but if you are putting in these bad performances, you will be dropped. Because I'm convinced he's a better defender than Steve Cook.
Oh, 100%. And some of the tackles he pulled out against Harry Kane was superb. And I don't think he deserves to be off the pitch for this long, to be honest.
No, so I think bringing him back in, bringing Niakate back in, and that's a solid defence to me.
Yeah, totally agree. Lodi, we've had a bit of disagreement about. Brazilian international, I would rather have Toffolo at left back after a few of Lodi's performances. What's your views on Lodi?
Well, the thing is on the Toffolo case, he was good for the first couple of games, and it almost seems a shame for him that we suddenly get this Brazilian international who played for Atletico Madrid. I think in performances, I'd say Leicester was obviously not his greatest game, and he did get turned inside out by Madison a couple of times, but I think he offers so much going forward and sort of that we can't miss out on that, in my opinion.
I do see what you mean. There is a problem going forward, and in my opinion, the fault lies in the midfield. There clearly isn't a connection from the back 4, back 5, whatever it may be, to the striker. Williams has been okay. I think he's been up and down. He's flattered to deceive at times. But I just don't think Lodi's been there. Ali, what were your thoughts on Lodi's performance?
So, first of all, yeah, there's no denying he was absolutely torn apart by Madison, who was playing on the right and but in a sort of fluid role where he was sometimes up against him but sometimes moving around. And I do acknowledge as a fullback those are sometimes difficult players to deal with, especially if you're not being overloaded. But I think there's a sort of wider point about Renan Lodi that is he's been, if you're going to play him and if you're going to play Nico Williams concurrently, where both of them are quite attacking wing-backs, especially when you play... So in this game, it was Lingard and Johnson as the wingers, both who want to be fairly central, and therefore you're relying on those guys as the width. You can't do it simultaneously whilst also having defensive, you know, responsibility, because Lodi and Williams both want to bomb forward. You have to have 3 midfielders. It's the same thing that happens, like, people are asking, it's quite a zeitgeisty Premier League question right now, what's happened to Trent Alexander-Arnold? And my opinion on that is that as Henderson's got older and less mobile and therefore out of favour, that Trent's still doing things as if Henderson was there to cover him, but he isn't anymore. And I think the same thing is true of those two. You have to either pick one or the other and allow a more defensive fullback to be on the opposite wing, or you have to play three defensively responsible midfielders. And I do wonder, that team would still have some creativity if you played, say, Mangala or Kouyaté, either or, O'Brien and Remo Freuler. O'Brien was maybe Forest's best player against Leicester.
I thought he's okay. I quite like him as a sort of, but I'd rather have Ryan Yates to actually add some fire and brimstone to the occasion, because I just think, if you actually look at that starting 11, Cook and McKenna, McKenna is the only one who started, Brennan Johnson, I suppose, but two players from last year are actually starting from last year. The problem is, if you ask me, there's not enough cohesion. We need more cohesion between the players. There simply isn't. It looked an absolute mess, didn't it, Luke? Luke, did you actually get a chance to watch the game?
I've seen a few of the highlights.
Yeah, it just didn't look like a team, did it?
I mean, it's hard to get 22 new players into a team that know each other straight away.
Mm.
We've seen it with Ipswich last year. They brought over 20 players, and it ended in Paul Cook being sacked. So, I mean, and Derby this season too, because they've just started a whole new squad. So basically the same position as Forest, but going down a league instead of going up. So yeah, it's just really hard to get 22 new players playing with a lot of chemistry, because you need chemistry to survive in any league, really, don't you? So
yeah,
I think if they did have a good core of players, which they, well, in the end, it doesn't look like they have, well, Premier League standard players, then they would be fine, but they don't, and they had to get load more players in. And I mean, you've seen other fan bases take the mick a lot about 22 new players, but they did need some players, because most of last season's good players were loans. So it's a tricky one, because he needed to bring in lots of players, but them players don't seem like they've got a lot of chemistry between them.
I totally agree, and that's the very nuanced point from a neutral. You often hear 22 new players. No one ever seems to mention the fact we could have a starting 11 of people who aren't at the club anymore. Kieran, as we usually say, is on the show with me. He can't be here today. He's on the M4, we think. So here was his Leicester City review.
Leicester versus Nottingham Forest. Where do I begin? Now, from the start, Leicester looked the better side. They looked like they had more belief. They looked like they had a more coherent team. And Forest ultimately were punished for all of their mistakes this game. Cooper got the setup wrong, starting with two men in midfield, completely overrun by Leicester's what ended up being a four-man midfield. So it was a real tactical misjudgment there. Lingard, Lodi, Kouyaté, all very disappointing. They didn't look at it at all, weren't looking to get stuck in at all. There was just no belief in the side. And that is a real issue when you're fighting to stay in the Premier League. You need to have that kind of that drive and belief that you're good enough to be in this league. And Forest just don't look like they have that. Now, I've got to say, James Maddison played phenomenally this game. One of the best performances I've seen from him in a very long time. And Harvey Barnes' goal was also very well taken. I mean, they weren't bad goals to concede, but you shouldn't be conceding four to bottom of the league. It just wasn't a very good game for Forest. And obviously, they brought in a new sporting director now. Ex-Watford one, who was responsible for Richarlison, Doucouré, and there was one other player that I can't remember, bringing them in, Kapoue, that's it, and they have stuck by Cooper for now, and whether that's going to prove to be, it's at risk, but it was whether it was riskier to bring in someone new. And I don't particularly think there's anyone free other than maybe Dyche that they would have brought in that would have done well anyway. So I think that this the next few games for Forest are really vital to them, their survival, and they've got to really, really start finding some form from somewhere, and players have got to start... They've got to be given a kick up the arse, because, like, to be honest, it just isn't good enough at the moment, and they're paying the price for it. But, yeah, hopefully Forest can turn this around, and hopefully we will see them out of the relegation zone sometime soon.
The dulcet tones of Kieran Etheridge there. And we're going to sacrifice a song for that, and I hope you're all happy for that. Thanks, Kieran, for being not on the M4. I've been reliably informed. Where is he, Ali?
We think he's on either the M1 or the M5, depending on how far down to past Birmingham he's got by now.
Drive safely, sweet prince. Right. Forest have Villa, Wolves, Brighton, Liverpool and Arsenal as their next five fixtures. Oh dear.
There's a couple winnable games.
There's a few winnable games. Isaac, will you be going to the Villa game on Monday?
Yes, I will be.
Thoughts on the atmosphere? What can the City Ground produce for a game like this?
It's got to produce everything, because the rumour is that Cooper has one game left.
Yeah.
And so sort of the fans need to show that it doesn't matter necessarily where we are in the league. At the end of the day, this is the first manager in 14 years to be able to like take us away from the championship, and so it's all about him. It's not about the Greeks. It's not about anything like that. And we've seen it with Burnley. They went up with Dyche, relegated with him, stuck with him, and ended up in Europe.
Yeah, very good point. I'm going to stick with you because you are a true Forest fan. Cooper in for as long as possible, you're thinking?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think there is a point. So if we lose,
yeah,
I don't know, say it makes like 8-9 games in a row lost, where the point where the atmosphere and like the dressing room atmosphere is completely gone, maybe at that point you go, right, something has to be done. But you can't just give up on it this quickly.
Totally agree. Not that many games, only 7 more games until including the EFL. Oh no, not including the EFL Cup. There's 8 games including the EFL Cup for a third round against Tottenham till the Christmas break, essentially, with the World Cup. It's so difficult. Villa got a disappointing 0-0 draw against Leeds. Luke, are Villa for the taking, or again are they just too good for Forest at the moment?
I think Steven Gerrard has underperformed this Villa side. I think they should be at least mid-table. Where are they now?
They're 14th.
They should be at least mid-table with this Villa side, because this Villa side does have like European, like probably Europa League standard players. So yeah, I think that's a game that Forest should probably target, and Wolves too. But at that point, Wolves might have a new manager bounce, so you might be a bit screwed there.
Cheers. But if you actually look at Villa, Coutinho, I was about to say Tyrone Mings, Matty Cash, Danny Ings, sorry, that's really throwing
me. Always a Matty Cash answer.
There's always a Matty Cash answer. Ollie Watkins, it's a really good side. Ali, are they just waiting to connect? Like Leicester have been almost.
I think it's less apt to compare them to Leicester, who haven't brought anyone in, minus Wout Fyshe, who was, by the way, absolutely fantastic in the Forest game.
Yeah, you slagged him off on the last one, and he was superb.
Well,
is it the curse of Ali Glenn?
That just goes to show how much I... Why am I even here? Who knows?
Well, to bully us now.
What I was about to say is that the better comparison for Aston Villa is, in fact, your very own Nottingham Forest, who have brought in a lot of players in a way that I think could be described as scattergun, a lot of individually good players. And I think that's true of Forest as well. I think there are a lot of players who are Premier League quality, but Gerrard has not really figured out a way to get them tactically cohesive, to get them in the system well enough. And like, they have a few players who are a bit predisposed to be a bit of passengers if the game's not going their way. Coutinho is a magic player, but especially as he's gotten older, has the ability to go missing. Same with Emi Buendia, when like he was magical in the Championship, but in that Norwich season definitely had moments of brilliance and what have you, but can go missing when they're on a bad run. So I think if Forest are going to win a game in their next five, Villa will be the one, because how Gerrard's still in that job, I'm a little surprised. I've been really disappointed. I thought he would be slightly better than he has ended up being with his success with that Rangers side, but that's not been the case, and I can't really see him turning. I have more hope for Cooper turning it round than I do for Gerrard, and that, considering how bleak the both of you have been on this podcast, that says quite a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, Forest have recently announced a new sporting director. Isaac has given a sort of humph and a mutley groan there.
Yeah.
Go on, let's hear your thoughts.
I kind of did. One of the like main reasons I wanted to come on here was to sort of rant about the whole situation up top in Forest.
Go for
and
it.
To do with the owners and... The rumour is that they're going to be sacking... what's his name? The CEO.
Dane Murphy?
Yeah, they're going to be sacking Dane Murphy because of they're annoyed that he's the one taking all the credit for signing of Cooper and for the promotion for his last season. And there seems to be some sort of disconnect now, and it sort of can be seen maybe in the transfer window between the signings and stuff that the Greeks want versus the signings and stuff that Cooper possibly and Dane Murphy want. And I don't know if you saw it online, but around the time that we were making a lot of these signings, when Fabrizio Romano was announcing them, he would always like, especially with the big name players, go, Marinakis' son, crucial in the deal. Mm. Especially for players like Lingard and these big names, he'd go, well done to Marinakis' junior, whatever his name is, in this signing. And sort of seeing that the owner wants his son to be seen as this, you know, brilliant guy who's making all these signings, and if there is some sort of disconnect between him and Dane Murphy and getting rid of him, there seems to be a lot more issues than just scratch the surface at this club and maybe responsible for the reasons that things are going on at the minute.
Yeah, you say that, and I get that we should be incredibly grateful for where we are, think about the Fawaz years and all that before it.
Oh, yeah.
But there is problems. There still can be problems in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. Now, last year we were always incredibly grateful to be where we were. We saw what was happening at Notts County, down the road at Derby. Whilst we found that funny, we knew there was a sort of realism that could have easily been us. Really easily could have been us in around 2015-16.
Definitely.
And we're lucky to be here. But that doesn't mean we can't still be a little bit disappointed in some of the signings. If you ask me, I think we haven't signed for a Steve Cooper side. No. We've signed for a Premier League side. And that doesn't account for Cooper. Now, you could make the argument, I think Ito Karanka had something like 8 different managers' signings in his side when he started. And then obviously he brought 7 in. And then who would have been next? Martin O'Neill had 8 managers.
Oh, I love Martin.
Oh, yeah. Much love for Martin in the room. But yeah, it doesn't feel like they're Cooper signings. And do you think Marinakis has been totally backing Cooper? Or do you think there's maybe an ulterior motive?
I think he has backed Cooper, and the signing of Gibbs White was sort of evident of that. Cooper always said that was his main signing, and the contract talks of Cooper signing his new contract and the things about it being the details being leaked, and apparently that one of the main reasons that Cooper wanted to like be able to sign his new contract is if Gibbs White signed. And so you see players like that. I think maybe someone like Williams seems like a Cooper signing.
Yeah, well,
but you have well, yeah, basically but you have like, yeah, Lingard, who, you know, easy poster boy for the club, easy to, you know,
that's a financial signing more than
exactly,
anything like,
exactly. Where you just have to ask questions. And with it was like a few weeks ago we brought in is it Lee Charnley from Newcastle to be some sort of director at the club. And the rumour is that if and when Dane Murphy gets sacked, Lee Charnley goes into that CEO position, and Newcastle fans complaining a lot about him because apparently he's a massive yes man.
Oh, and wonderful.
For someone with the ego of Marinakis, you just have to look at Olympiacos. I completely forgot about this. You look at Olympiacos' signings this summer. It's ridiculous. It's James Rodriguez. It's Marcelo. It's just these random big star names, you know, way past their prime. And you just go, is that tactical? And if Forest turn into that, then it's just depressing.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's just a bit of a worry at the moment for Forest, because Cooper going could lead to all sorts of problems. Mm-hmm. And I've just read the headlines, Matty Cash will be back at the City Ground on Monday. How will you welcome him, Isaac?
I think you've got to do it with respect. The same as Antonio was shown when we played West Ham, when he came off and got the, you know, standing ovation. Obviously, I'm worried about playing against him. He's a brilliant player. And the fact that he's shown nothing but respect to Forest, that's admirable. I think you see some players leave different clubs and stuff and don't want to be even like associated with their ex-club, but the respect shown, I think that has to be shown back.
One thing that has certainly been the only positive of this week has been Forest fans singing their hearts out against Leicester. Forest actually outsung Leicester, and you mentioned Leicester fans unveiled an awful tifo. So we're going to delve into the world of the foxhole with Ali Glenn right now.
That sounds...
What was that tifo?
So that tifo was made by Union FS, one of our biggest fan groups, as a light-hearted dig at the sort of world-famous City Ground, and asking the sort of broader question, who in Singapore, or who in, let pick a country, Paraguay, has heard of the world-famous City Ground, whereas there are many people across the world who know all too well the 5001 story, as well as and the folklore and the movies and books that have been written about it. The fictional in my head, but should be real. I think Claudio Ranieri should be given the keys to England and knighted, even though he's Italian, but...
And managed Chelsea. Luke, if you'd like to come round, please, because I view you as my artistic sort of creative mind. I'm having a look at it now. Isaac, I'm sure you've seen this. It's crayon-esque, really. Luke, describe what you're seeing. Without swearing, please, and into the microphone instead of just staring. So, voice it.
I know it's like them lifting the Premier League. Well, I mean, why?
It does have Wes Mondo in it. So.
That's a very good point. There's a
has
lovely
he got a mask on.
No, that's his beard.
It's great radio,
but it's a sort of.
I don't get it at all.
It doesn't. It's a very poorly drawn Premier League trophy with a Burger King crown on top. Wes Mondo with a full head of hair, which is, to be fair, true. That man has always got a full head of hair. Some would say, yeah, I'd say so. He's not Guy Moosey, he's got a lovely trim. But yeah, the world famous City, you're trying to make a rivalry out of something. Isaac, what's your views on Leicester City as a Forest fan?
Tim Pot. I mean, no. I think it is a third wheeling situation where I remember the FA Cup game. I'm, you know, just trying to go back to happier times. But on Leicester's socials when they put, oh, it's Derby Day and stuff like that, and it's a shame for someone like Leicester not to have a proper rival. So I think every team deserves a rival.
They got Coventry. Why don't you hate Coventry?
We've not played Coventry in years.
Well, we get to play you later on in the year.
I hear a lot of Forest fans claim to be unbothered, but I have, even in this room, I have seen a lot of, I don't know if this is actually even a real word, but a lot of botherment surrounding the game.
Although I think it was more, there was other things going on that had annoyed me that day. But yes, it was a disappointing result with a disappointing performance, and it does remind you that things can only get better for the Reds. You're listening to the last 5 minutes of Over the Trent live on University Radio Nottingham in the Thursday rotational slot. Now we're going to only just have a last chance to talk about this. Nottingham Forest women play Derby County at the City Ground next Sunday. Not this one, the one after. Luke, you went to the last time these two teams met at the City Ground. How was it?
My biggest memory about it was actually screaming children.
in joy or agony or
I was just screaming throughout the match. So I think it was more family based atmosphere.
Yeah.
I remember there was a penalty. I don't know which team it was for. Quality was quite good. Wasn't what I expected. I think Derby might have won, actually.
Derby did win 2-1. Yeah. And this is essentially League One football. And it was really good quality from what I seem to remember. I remember Pavan from Chatting Like Champions, who's currently on a work placement, coming back to Nottingham on Friday. Very excited. Yeah, he's coming back for Ocean. The 20th anniversary of Ocean. If you want to get in the mood for Ocean, listen to the pre-Ocean show with Jack Napton. Now we've got 2 minutes. What does everyone want to plug? Plug, plug, plug. Isaac, as you are our guest, please plug away.
I will plug tonight's show. It's going to be a very special one. I'm very excited to do it. Yeah, if you're up. If you like hip hop, give it a listen.
Wonderful. Luke Green, what are you going to plug?
EFL at your end, the English Football League podcast that me and Harry Waring do. I was going to go to MK versus Shrewsbury this weekend, but I can't because train strikes. Horrible game, because if Milton Keynes win,
it's the big derby, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to be depressed for a numerous amount of weeks.
Well, you're not the only podcast that has got a derby on this weekend. On Touchdown, my co-host Jake Longhurst is a New York Jets fan. I am a Miami Dolphins fan. They're playing this weekend, and Tua Tagovailoa, our amazing quarterback, is injured due to a concussion. I'm really nervous about this because the Jets have pulled out some good wins recently, and I just don't want us to go into 3-2. The Dolphins are the only positive team I've got going for me. Ali, what would you like to plug?
I would like to plug a couple of things, if that's all right.
Yep, go for it.
First of all, spoke too soon, University Radio Nottingham Cycling Podcast. We will have an episode out this weekend, I believe, if not a little bit later, where we will be covering and reviewing the UCI World Championships, Remco Evenepoel's fantastic win, his double in the Vuelta a España, Annemiek van Vleuten's win in the women's race, and the Il Lombardia, the last major race of the year, and also... going to the After Dark side, we have got the return of Living for the Weekend, which I will be hosting next Wednesday, 9 to 11 p.m. Great music, average presenting, and slightly sleep-deprived ramblings coming your way. Hopefully, please tune in.
What a wonderful way to end. Notts County face Woking, Mansfield Town versus Barrow, Forest play Aston Villa. Those will be the next few games we're going to talk about. And this is a simple message to Steve Cooper: please stay another day.
Take the pain, won't you stay another day?